Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic fiction tends to be rather bleak. The world as we know it has ended. Chaos rules, and humans, or what's left of them, tend to be reduced to their basest natures. Survival is paramount, and all the niceties of so-called civilization tend to go by the wayside. But what happens a few years after the apocalyptic event, when a new normal has settled in? How do the survivors fare? What do their lives look like? How do they define and reimagine their humanity? The Dog Stars is Peter Heller's exploration of a world laid waste by a superflu. Heller is an award-winning adventure writer who has traveled the world as an expedition kayaker. He's written for numerous magazines and has published 4 books of nonfiction detailing some of those adventures. But The Dog Stars is his first novel. Peter Heller was in Milwaukee last month to read from it at Boswell Books, and he stopped by the Lake Effect studio then to chat with me. Peter, welcome to Lake Effect. It is a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to be here.
The Dog Stars, this is your first novel. Most of your previous books already read like boys' own adventures. You know, you're going into places that most of us don't even realize exist, let alone that you can actually have an adventure there, so much beyond the scope of most of our everyday experiences. So what was it that you wanted to explore writing a novel that you couldn't already explore in doing the nonfiction writing?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I've been wanting to write a novel ever since I was like 11. Ever since Annie Bosworth, my librarian in my school, handed me In Our Time by Hemingway, I read that book. I was in New York City. I read about the Big Two-Hearted River, parts 1 and 2, and I wanted to do that. I wanted to hop off a freight up in, you know, northern Michigan and walk through grass and have it wet my pant legs and camp and burn my tongue on cowboy coffee and fish the most beautiful river on earth. And, you know, break up with a girl that was too good for me, who could row and fish. I never understood why he did that. I wanted that all my life was to write like this guy, you know. And then as I read more and more fiction, I mean, then I had other mentors and idols. And I was always attracted to poetry as well. And I loved the most musical sort of fiction writers, you know, the sort of the In the House of Faulkner, the guys who wrote like they were, you know, they were prose poems. I just wanted to do that. And when I got out of college, no one had ever told me you couldn't make a living being a poet. I thought it was mean of them. So I was a kayaker. I just started writing for outdoor magazines because that's what I knew. I mean, I knew how to, you know, paddle. I was doing extreme kayaking. So I got sort of pleasantly diverted away from the initial passion for literature, writing for magazines. And all my other nonfiction books, they came out of those stories that I wrote for magazines. So one thing followed another. But a couple of years ago, it's just 2 years ago now, I had about 9 months out ahead of me, I figured, where I didn't have to take an assignment. And I thought, you know, it's time. I want to do what I've wanted to do my whole life. And I sat down and, you know, it was like coming home. That's what it felt like. It was so thrilling. And I felt like at last I could take, you know, the one hand that had been tied behind my back and go full bore with all cylinders and just write this thing I've always wanted to write. I didn't want to know what was going to happen. I mean, in all my other stories, because they were nonfiction, I always knew what the ending was going to be. I knew what was going to happen next because they happen. I didn't want to know this time. I wanted to be surprised the way you are in a river when you come around the corner and it could be a pool or a waterfall or, you know what, 10 guys with spears, you know. I wanted that thrill. And so I started with the first line and had no clue and just let it rip.
Fishing outdoors, spending time in the outdoors and not knowing what's coming around the bend really play huge roles in this novel. It is post-apocalyptic, but that is just sort of the backdrop of this one man's relationship with his natural world in a lot of ways. I mean, is Higgs sort of part of you and what you might imagine you might be if you were in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I hope I would be as formidable as Higgs. I mean, he's, you know, I mean, he's interesting because he was a poet, you know, and he had to be a contractor. So there's parallels, you know. You know, he ends up being pretty good at that, you know, pretty good at defending himself.
But he doesn't think he is initially.
But he doesn't like it. He hates it. You know, he doesn't even like to kill the trout that he eats. And I don't either. I love to fish. I hate that part where you have to knock it against a rock, you know. I hunt also. I hate that one moment where you have to kill the thing. And Hig is like that too. I mean, so there are a lot of Hig loves a lot of the things that I love, and he shies away from a lot of the stuff that I shy away from. And so in that way, he's sort of a doppelganger. He is happiest in nature. He's most connected in nature. He loves his dog. So me too.
Yeah. And the dog, Jasper, I mean, this is also a novel about relationships and connection, whether you have the connection and want it or don't want it, which also plays a key role too. But the one he does want very much is the one with Jasper. And Jasper is such an endearing character. And he's the dog.
He's the dog. He's some people's favorite character. You know, I get emails all the time about Jasper. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I had all dogs growing up, and I had dogs, you know, at different parts of my life. And I don't have one now because I travel so much, and it just wouldn't be fair. So I have a cat. But Jasper sort of was an amalgam of, you know, all the great dogs that I loved.
And again, it's that relationship that he has with Hig and that Hig has with him that explores. That's a very elemental relationship that we have with dogs.
Yeah, and it keeps – okay, so Hig is a guy that's lost everything. I mean, you know, he lost his wife. She was pregnant with their first child. He lost all his friends, all his family. I mean, this is a guy who's lost everything. He has his dog, Jasper, and Jasper keeps him connected to his humanity. I mean, you know, Hig's whole challenge in this post-apocalyptic world is how to stay connected with the things that he loves and not just become overwhelmed by despair. And he's heavily traumatized also, as you would be. So Jasper's a big part of that. When he's with Jasper, he stays connected to something that he really loves. When he's in nature, when he's fishing, he stays connected to something that he's loved his whole life. And, you know, the stars, I think, of the dog stars represent that for him too. You know, when he and Jasper sleep out every night. He tried sleeping in one of the houses that was by the airport, but it made him too sad. If he and Jasper can sleep out under the stars every night and he makes up constellations, he said he had a book on the stars, now he doesn't. So he just makes up, you know, a bear and a goat maybe where they're not supposed to be, and he makes them for the animals that have gone extinct, and one for his wife, one for Jasper. It's a way of staying connected to things he loves and reinventing this world in this new reality. And he sleeps out because he feels like maybe he can pretend that one day they could just pack up everything and go home. It's provisional. It feels temporary.
But then you have Bangley.
Yeah.
And Bangley is almost like looking in the mirror and seeing the person you don't want to see.
Yeah.
You know, but I also really love Bangley.
I love Bangley too, oddly. I mean, Bangley's just a mean SOB. I mean, he is really good at one thing, which is, you know, killing people from long range, you know. He shoots first, asks questions later. He is all about survival. He is the ultimate survivalist. And he's one of those guys. I mean, I think a lot of us know people like this who would have been very disappointed if the apocalypse hadn't come. You know, he's sort of been waiting his whole life for this, and he's really good at it. And, you know, thank goodness for Hig, because they have this sort of odd couple relationship, and Bangley really protects Hig in many ways.
And I was going to say that they end up overlapping somewhat, their personalities, and they influence each other in ways I think that they don't expect that they're going to.
I think that's true. I think Bangley, by the end of the book, I mean – by the end of the book, Bangley is a human being. And he wouldn't have been that without that relationship with Hig. I mean, he realizes that Hig has become family. And it's very moving to me. I mean, you know, I just wrote the book. And because I started with the first line and wrote into it, all of this stuff was a surprise for me. And it was, you know, it was wonderful to see how those guys evolved.
Right. And they certainly did. And yeah. And watching that evolution was fascinating. At one point, without giving anything away in the book, there's a point at which Hig makes a decision that basically changes his world, changes right. Bangley's world, changes the world as they know it. I was trying to figure out exactly how to ask this question.
You know, I think we can talk about it because it's sort of like it's on the back flap, you know, and it's sort of like the one thing I knew that was going to happen. Like I knew a couple of things. One is I knew that Hig, partway through the book, halfway through probably, was going to have to leave this little airport in the country that's on the plains off the mountain front in Colorado, get in his little Cessna. I mean, what he still has left is this old 1956 Cessna 182 that he flies every day on a patrol looking for survivors and intruders. With Jasper, dog is my co-pilot. They fly together every day. And I knew that he was going to get in his old Cessna and fly out across the mountains looking for human connection. And I knew that he was going to fly past his point of no return, which is that point at which you don't have enough fuel to get back. You've flown too far. I knew for dramatic reasons that was going to happen. And I also had this idea that he was going to meet. There's a transmission that's very early on in the book. They talk about it on the back flap. He gets this sort of broken transmission from Western Colorado. I knew he was going to go looking for those people.
But it's the choice that interests me and how it leads up to that. It's like he gets to a point, I think, where he has to do it. And I think we all get to that point at some point in our lives where you're looking at the unknown and you choose to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are the most important parts of, places in our lives where we get way out of our comfort zone and go into that unknown. T.S. Eliot has this poem that I just love called The Four Quartets where he talks about that. You know that poem. To arrive at a place, something about where we have not been, we have to go through a place in which we are not. And it's sort of like that feeling of you sort of obliterate your old self when you make a big decision like that and take a huge risk and you emerge as something new. And it's, the most exciting times of our lives are like that. Whether it's, we pop the question and get married.
Or decide to write a novel.
Or decide to write a novel or, take that leap off of whatever, And so it's a big deal for Higg and it works out well dramatically in the book. And for me, I had no idea what he was going to discover when he took that leap. And it was really, really fun for me to see what happened.
I'm curious about that process for you of literally not knowing where you were going to go. Did you find yourself being dictated to? Did you just kind of leave yourself open and say, let's just see what comes out?
Yeah, it's a funny dance. So one of my best friends from high school was the producer of Lost, the TV show. He's the executive producer and the showrunner. So he ran the writers and, he was responsible for the ending. You might not like it. Anyway, I called him up because I knew he would know about structure. And I said, hey, Carlton, do you know any novelists who start with the first line and have no clue? And he said, oh, yeah, I've worked with Stephen King. And he often starts with the first line and just writes into the story. That suggests a voice and then a place and a situation. And before you know it, you've got a story going. And then Elmore Leonard, which really surprised me. I mean, here's these tightly plotted crime novels in South Florida. I figure with Elmore Leonard and probably with Stephen King, too, at some point they must step back and plot because, they're so tight. But it sort of gave me permission to work like that. So, I wrote into it, and it's a funny sort of dance. I mean, in some ways, it was like Higg was just sitting across the campfire one evening in the, in a windy fire by a creek telling me this is what happened to me, a few years ago. And so in that way, it was really moving. I would just listen to this voice. But in other ways, it's like sort of riding a spirited horse. There's a dance there because it's not just like I'm hearing a voice. I have my writer's instincts too. And so you're riding the narrative, that spirited horse, and you get to a fork and the horse maybe wants to go down into that gully, that trail. And you're kind of as a writer, you've been there before and it's not a good place to go. We're going to take a right and we're going to go up into these woods and those meadows, and it's sort of like that constant dance where you're sort of listening to the voice and you're kind of just, you're also nudging it a little bit. Very hard to describe, what that feels like. But I have to tell you, I write in a coffee shop. I was often laughing out loud. Sometimes I'd be like crying and I have tears dripping off my cheek. And I know that people were looking at me going, hey man, that guy's going through a bad divorce or something, somebody just died.
Yeah, somebody give him a coffee.
Yeah.
Give him a Danish, he'll feel better.
Yeah.
Peter Heller, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
Peter Heller is the author of The Dog Stars, his first novel, which is just out in paperback. Heller is a contributing editor at Outside Magazine, Men's Journal, and National Geographic Adventure. In addition, he's an award-winning adventure writer and the author of four books of literary nonfiction. He lives in Denver. Heller was in Milwaukee last month on a book tour, and he spoke with us then. 150 years ago today, the Battle of Gettysburg began. We'll commemorate the battle that is often described as the turning point in the American Civil War next, when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.